This is VOA News, reporting by remote. I'm Michael Brown. U.S. President Joe Biden is directing the 50 states as well as territories and tribal governments to make all adults eligible for the coronavirus vaccine by the start of May and get the country back closer to normal by the 4th of July. In his first primetime address to the nation since becoming president, Biden said he would deploy more active duty troops to support vaccination efforts and will allow more people, such as medical students, veterinarians, and dentists, to deliver shots. Biden also appealed to Americans to do their part to prevent another surge in infections and deaths, saying we need everyone to get vaccinated. The president said people should keep wearing masks as recommended by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and keep washing their hands and stay socially distanced. U.S. unemployment compensation claims eased last week, according to the Labor Department, as the world's biggest economy appears poised to recover from the damage wreaked by the coronavirus pandemic. Employers in many states are still facing directives to curtail their operations, but some state governors are revoking orders for people to wear face masks and allowing businesses to fully reopen. U.S. employers have called back millions of workers who were laid off during business shutdowns last year. But some hard-hit businesses have been slow to ramp up operations again or have closed permanently, leaving workers idle or searching for new employment. For details on more news, we invite you to join us at our website. That is voanews.com. Also, on the VOA mobile app. Via remote, this is VOA News. Hospitals in Brazil's main cities are reaching capacity. This, according to health officials, as the country recorded the world's highest COVID-19 death toll over the past week, triggering tighter restrictions on Thursday in its most populous states. In the past 7 days, Brazil has averaged more than 1,600 deaths per day, ahead of some 1,400 here in the United States, where the outbreak has ebbed. President Jair Bolsonaro attacked governors for the lockdowns again Thursday, including Sao Paulo State's move to ban soccer matches. Brazil's two most populous cities, São Paulo and Rio de Janeiro, moved to tighten measures Thursday, as their hospital struggled with a second wave of the virus, driven by a more contagious variant that emerged in the Amazon region. Myanmar's military junta accused deposed de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi of accepting more than $500,000 in bribes, as another day of coup protests Thursday resulted in more deaths among the demonstrators. Suu Kyi is already facing 4 criminal charges of illegally possessing 6 unregistered walkie-talkie radios, operating communications equipment without a license, violating COVID-19 protocols by holding public gatherings, and attempting to incite public unrest. Myanmar's military regime is coming under growing criticism from the international community for its violent actions against anti-coup demonstrators. Myanmar has been plagued by nonstop chaos since February 1st, when the military detained Suu Kyi and other officials of the National League of Democracy Party. Military officials have claimed widespread fraud in last November's general election, which the NLD won in a landslide, as justification for the takeover. The fraud allegations have been denied by Myanmar's Electoral Commission. A convicted Honduran drug trafficker and former leader of a cartel testified here in the United States federal court that he paid now President Juan Orlando Hernandez $250,000 for protection from arrest back in 2012. Divas Lino Rivera Merit Diago testified Thursday that he made the payment in cash through Hernandez's sister in exchange for protection from arrest by the military and preventive police. At the time of the alleged bribe, Juan Orlando Hernandez was leader of Honduras Congress. The president has repeatedly denied such allegations, saying traffickers are lying to protect themselves. For more news, join us, voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown via remote, VOA News.
morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganya in Washington, in for James Batty. Today is Friday, March the 12th, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you this morning. Four high-profile Ethiopian political prisoners ended their almost 40-day hunger strike. Their lawyer says that they called off the hunger strike after pleas from elders and other notable personalities in the country.
Currently, they are in the hospital, not in jail. That means under the custody or monitoring of the prison administration. They are in the hospital. Their health has been deteriorated.
Ipsas Kemeda is the lawyer representing Oromo politicians Jawar Mohammed and Bekele Gerba. And in Senegal, activists and authorities alike have called for a national day of mourning today, Friday, March 12th, after 10 people were reportedly killed during recent protests in the country. And questions still remain about the whereabouts of Tanzanian President John Pombe Magufuli after reports that he may be hospitalized with COVID-19 at a hospital in Nairobi or in India.
It has taken him going down with COVID-19 for Tanzanians to know that all these concoctions that the president has been peddling in recent months are of no effect, and the president himself and his people do not have faith in them at all. That's why they took him to Kenya.
That is Tanzanian opposition leader Tundu Lissu speaking from Belgium. And Kenya is marking the first anniversary of COVID-19 at the time when health experts say that the country is battling a third wave of the COVID-19 pandemic. We have those stories plus sports coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. And let's start off in Ethiopia, where high-profile political prisoners ended their 39-day hunger strike after what their lawyer says was a plea from their elders and other notable personalities in the country. The prisoners, including notable Oromo politicians Jawar Mohammed and Bekele Gerba, had refused to eat until the Ethiopian government released all Oromo political prisoners. The prisoners also called on authorities to allow the reopening of political party offices in Oromia. Jawar Mohammed and Bekele Gerba are among 22 individuals who were arrested in relation to a wave of ethnic unrest that followed the murder of popular musician Hachalu Hundessa in June of 2020. They faced charges including conspiring to dismantle the constitution by force and other terror-related offenses. Their lawyer Ipsa Gemeda tells me that his clients believe that the charges are politically motivated.
Currently, they are in the hospital, not in jail. That means under the custody or monitoring of the prison administration. They are in the hospital. Their health have been deteriorated. Doctors also saying that they lost 15 kilogram weight each. They are recovering now.
Okay, so they're recovering right now in the hospital. Can you explain to us, for our listeners, who just give us a little context and background on the purpose of their hunger strike, and have they achieved their purpose now that they ended the hunger strike?
As we all know, they are in jail since June 30, 2020. That is for more than 7 months. Our clients believe that the charges are politically motivated, and they believe that the charges brought against them because to hinder them from the election or to get them out of the whole political process in Ethiopia. Our clients are members and high rank officials of Oromo Federalist Congress, and others are also members, high rank officials of Oromo Liberation Front. So they believe that they are technically driven out of politics and the election to be conducted in the coming months. So they were opposing and they were accusing the government that the charges are politically motivated. They were asking that the release of all political prisoners. Most of them are Oromo political prisoners. They were also requesting the opening of political party offices. We know that more than 190 political parties' offices are closed across Oromia, the largest state in Ethiopian Federation. And the third demand of the hunger strike is the end of mistreatment of their families at prison and elsewhere.
So would you say would you say that the condition, these conditions have been met by the government now that the prisoners have decided to end their hunger strike?
Generally, we can say that the conditions are not met, especially the first two conditions, the release of all Oromo political prisoners and also other political prisoners. Of course, there are some prisoners who are released, the Yellow Movement prisoners, were wearing yellow clothing in solidarity of the Jawar Mohammed Ital, who are in yellow uniforms of the prison administration. And also there was another minor purpose or demand of the prisoners, that was the moving of Colonel Gamechu Ayana from unsafe prison cell to the safer prison cell. This was met, and the other major demands are not met. However, the Oromo elders and notable personalities were requesting so many times to end the hunger strike.
What is the government charging them with, and when do you expect them to appear in court next?
The government is accusing them of inciting civil war and a preparation of terrorism too, and also bearing illegal arms, and the additional one to specifically to Jawar Mohammed's case is telecom fraud. As it is opposed by defense lawyers' objection, the court dropped the bearing of illegal arms charge, and it is continuing with the three other major charges. These charges are politically motivated, they believe, our clients believe, and they are going to appear before court on March 15, 2021.
That was Ipsa Gemeda, the lawyer representing Oromo political prisoners, including Jawar Mohammed and Bekele Gerba. I reached him in Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa. Tanzania's main opposition leader, Tundu Lissu, says that he has information from reliable sources that President John Magufuli was in a hospital out of the country suffering from COVID-19. He says that he has information that Magufuli was later airlifted to India for treatment. All attempts to get Tanzanian government officials to comment on this claim were fruitless. Reuters reported that Kenya's foreign ministry and Nairobi hospital both say that they had no information to disclose, but Kenya's national newspaper cited unidentified political and diplomatic sources saying that an African leader that it did not name was being treated for COVID-19 on a ventilator at a Nairobi hospital. President Magufuli has been a denier of COVID-19, telling Tanzanians to put their trust in prayer and homemade treatments. He was last seen in public on February 27. Mr. Lissu denies that he was being political about President Magufuli's health. He tells VOA's James Batty that if Tanzanians do not believe his claim, then they should answer these questions. Where is the president and what is the state of his health?
My latest information tells me that they are planning to sneak him out to India because Kenya is too close to Tanzania, apparently, and they do not want the embarrassment. Should it come to the worst, they do not want the embarrassment of having to get him back to Tanzania from Kenya.
I think, you know, these days, because of COVID-19, especially when the Tanzanian president is a skeptic of COVID-19, so anytime someone, like an official, gets sick, especially the Zanzibar first vice president died recently, the first thought that comes to people is the person sick of COVID-19. What do you know?
Well, from what I hear, all these recent deaths are COVID-19 deaths. The first vice president of Zanzibar, Magufuli's own chief secretary, and the very senior officials in the government, in academia, you know, very high profile Tanzanians have died recently, and these are all deaths associated with COVID-19 complications. And the president himself is in Nairobi because of complications arising from COVID-19. So it has taken him going down with COVID-19 for Tanzanians to know that all these concoctions that the president has been peddling in recent months are of no effect, and the president himself and his people do not have faith in them at all. That's why they took him to Kenya.
So can you tell us, how do you know the whereabouts of the president?
Well, I have information from three highly placed sources in Nairobi, including at the Nairobi hospital where I stayed for 4 months after the attempted assassination of September 2017. I have sources from within the Kenyan intelligence, and I have the third source who is very close to powerful people in Nairobi, and all these three different sources have told me he is at the Nairobi hospital.
Now, what do you say to, say, supporters of President Magufuli who might think that you, say, I wouldn't say happy about his situation, but or that you are being political?
Whoever thinks that I'm being political should be able to answer these questions. Where is the president because he has not been seen in public since February 24th? And this is a president who doesn't go missing for 2 days, but he has been out of sight for over 2 weeks now. And there are rumors all over the place, and they are being reported in the international press. They cannot be reported inside Tanzania for reasons that there is no media freedom, but they are being reported outside Tanzania. There are rumors swelling on the social media that the president is very sick with COVID-19. He has had a cardiac arrest. He's in Nairobi. So if I'm being political, then they should answer these questions. Where is the president and what is his state of health?
Mr. Lissu, it's always a pleasure to speak with you, sir.
Thank you so much, Mr. Bhatti.
That is Tundu Lissu, the presidential candidate of Tanzania's main opposition Chadema party. He was speaking to VOA's James Bhatti from TNN, Belgium. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. In Malawi, the country's president, Lazarus Chakwera, received the first shot of the AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine Thursday during the launch of a vaccination program in the country. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
In a televised address at Zomba COVID-19 field hospital, President Chakwera commended the vaccine despite widespread public concern over its safety and efficacy.
AstraZeneca has been found by our scientists to be safe, effective, and suitable. In fact, as a show of good faith, I and others on this platform have volunteered to be the first to be vaccinated so that you can see that the vaccine is safe.
Chakwera said the vaccination program is a must-have for Malawi because of the damage COVID-19 has caused to the country. Malawi started the war against COVID-19 in March last year when a state of national disaster was first declared across the country because of the pandemic.
Since then, the pandemic has robbed us of our freedoms, shut down our businesses, destroyed our jobs, disrupted our travel, distorted our communal life, and destabilized our institutions.
Chakwera said most painful is that coronavirus, which causes COVID-19, has infected over 32,000 people, with 177 others dead, and 82% of them died during the second wave, which began in November. However, President Chakwera thanked healthcare workers for their efforts in combating the pandemic.
And it is fitting that 60,000 of them will be among the first to receive the vaccine during the first phase of this program.
Malawi is expected to receive 1.4 million doses of AstraZeneca vaccines through the COVAX initiative. Between March and May, Malawi will also receive 50,000 doses from India and 100,000 doses from African Union. With these consignments, Malawi is expected to vaccinate about 4 million people in its first phase of vaccination program. Health Minister Kumbize Kandodwechiponda encouraged Malawians to get vaccinated.
Our plea is that the vaccine is not mandatory, it is a voluntary. Oh, please, we appeal to you, come and get this vaccine. We are going to do it in stages. But at the end of the day, we want at least 60% of Malawians, they should get this vaccine.
Kandodwechiponda said Malawians should, however, continue to observe all measures against the pandemic, like washing hands with soap, observing social distance, and to put on face coverings. Lameck Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
And let's go to East Africa in Kenya, where the country is marking exactly 1 year since the first COVID case was reported in the country. Kenya, just like any other country in the world, has experienced a lot of challenges due to the COVID-19 pandemic. And as Atieno Odhiambo reports from Nairobi, this comes at a time when experts say that the country is experiencing the third wave of the pandemic as the rollout of vaccines for frontline workers is ongoing.
Kenya is marking the first anniversary of COVID-19 today. This comes at a time when the country is officially battling the third wave of the COVID-19 pandemic. Government spokesperson Sarah Soguna, a survivor of COVID-19, describes his ordeal with the deadly virus. He says more than 7 months later, he is still dealing with residual symptoms of the disease.
The first week and the second week were really, really bad. But after the second week now, there was some good progress, and I was eventually let to go after 28 days in hospital. Not because I was feeling much better, but simply because I had tested negative, and therefore to limit the possibility of cross-infection. From the time I was discharged until today, it's about 7 or so months, and I'm still not being able to smell everything. You know, bats have come back, but and the sense of smell, not everything. So the smell has to be very strong for me to be able to pick it up.
Health Cabinet Secretary Mutahi Kagwe is warning that the situation could get worse after the positivity rate shot to 14%, the highest since last year. The number of deaths recorded this month have also increased. Kagwe adds that the new wave appears deadlier than the previous ones, as patients being hospitalized are presenting more severe symptoms.
I want to make it official today and to say that Kenya is already in its third wave. Positivity rate that we are announcing at about 14% is also the highest one since the last phase is sometime in November. We have seen an increase in numbers of those who are on ventilators. We have seen an increase in number on those who need oxygen. And therefore, we must continue with vigilance to ensure that these cases do not overrun our healthcare system.
Last week, Wednesday, Kenya received 1.02 million doses of Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine in the first consignment. Yesterday, it received 100,000 more doses from the government of India. The vaccination drive for frontline health workers was officially rolled out last week, Friday, and yesterday, it was officially launched for teachers. The drive will target Kenya's 500,000 teachers, starting with teachers aged 58 and above in the first phase. Teachers Service Commission Chief Executive Officer Dr. Nancy Masharia was the first to receive the vaccine and lauded the government for including teachers in the priority list.
The government has made the right decision to protect over 330,671 teachers working in public schools and 158,000 teachers working in private schools. The government has considered all these teachers, both in private and public, and they will be vaccinated since they are attending to children. This vaccination will go a long way to give us comfort that our over 15,000 teachers aged 58 and above will get protection from the COVID-19.
Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta is expected to address the country today on the new COVID-19 containment measures. The current ones include mandatory wearing of face masks in public places, ban of political gatherings, and dusk to dawn curfew, which most Kenyans hope will be lifted. The total viral caseload now stands at 111,185, with 1,899 fatalities. The latest victim is opposition leader Raila Odinga, who tested positive for COVID-19 last night. However, his doctor says he's responding well to treatment at Nairobi Hospital. Atieno Odhiambo, VOA Daybreak Africa, in Nairobi, Kenya.
And it's time for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, Jackson. We begin the sport with the CAF presidential elections, where South African billionaire mining magnate Patrice Motsepe is expected to be declared as the new president of the Confederation of African Football, as he looks set to stand unopposed at today's General Assembly in the Moroccan capital, Rabat. Ivorian Jacques Anoma, Senegal's Augustin Senghor, and Mauritanian Ahmed Yahia were previously in the running for the top job until FIFA President Gianni Infantino brokered a deal. The trio opted to withdraw and support Motsepe's candidacy after a deal was struck in Rabat on March the 7th. Kalusha Bwalya is former Zambia Football Association president.
Patrice has come to come in with a new refocus and revive African football. So this is very, very important. So let us, you know, make a line on the ground and say we're starting from here. We have a seasoned leader.
But not all countries' football association presidents on the continent are in support of the role FIFA played in ensuring that Patrice Motsepe contests unopposed. One such person is Musa Beliti, the Liberian Football Association president. He spoke to my colleague James Barting on why he differed with his colleagues on Gianni Infantino's intervention in the election of the CAF president.
What do you mean when you say that FIFA fronted capitulation of CAF presidential candidates? What exactly do you mean?
They fronted because they organized it. They organized a meeting and they forced the other three candidates to give up because they blackmailed them. You know, that's what they're specialized in. That's what they always do. They blackmail them and force them out of the race in order for one candidate to remain in the race.
Do you think the other candidates, most of whom are, I think, from West Africa, have been shortchanged? Or can we say that FIFA went for the most qualified candidate, Motsepe?
FIFA did not go for the most qualified candidate. They are looking for the candidate they can use. Motsepe would have won the election, but he would have won with his own vote. And that will put FIFA in a difficult position because it means that he wouldn't have been beholden onto them. So to make Motsepe to feel that he is their candidate, they made him that the only way to do that is to make the man not to face competition. This is well planned and laid out by FIFA.
In athletics, the Department of Sports in South Africa has pledged over $800,000 to help Olympian Caster Semenya appeal her testosterone ruling. The confirmation comes on the back of Athletics South Africa's request for the department to make financial resources available for Caster Semenya to possibly return to her number one sports. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson, and have a great weekend. And that's it for this Friday, March the 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again Monday for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very great weekend, Africa.
Sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.